We're starting an archive with RealLibertyMedia.com, The Road Less Traveled with Gary Allen to Gigi's Boo, and we'll add the rest of the stuff in later. So now the archive's running, and I can delete that out as we go along. I just had it sitting right up in front of me, and I didn't do it. Anyhow, that's what happens when you have too much time on your hands. Too much time. So what else is going on, Gigi's Boo? Anything fun?
Well, everything's fun. Life itself's fun. I mean, you know, you have to make do with what you have, and it doesn't take much to make people happy. It really doesn't. It doesn't me. I think it might other people, but it doesn't me. And yeah. That's the story tonight. We're going to talk about frugality.
Yes. That's a loaded topic to me, because it takes us right back to the whole creation of a fiat currency system, and the real reasons behind why that was done. And it has everything to do with accelerating development.
Mm-hmm.
And making things move faster and faster, and building bigger and bigger, and not having to be constrained by tying your wealth down to something that actually has value, the value that is only increased by labor and so forth. But you know, when you can get away from those restrictions, you can just build as quickly and as you want. And in the process, you throw the entire system out of whack. This whole since 1911 has thrown our entire social system worldwide, for the most part, completely out of balance. I mean, we have developed so rapidly, and especially technologically, rapidly, that our social systems haven't been allowed to develop along with it. So we just weren't designed for that. It's like GMOs in a way. You know, our body just wasn't designed to work well with that stuff. And folks, that means it's the simple of it. You know, the whole mm-hmm. simplicity of that, and everyone looks the other way. So our assets are basically plundered, and you're given an IOU in the form of a Federal Reserve note. That your labor is used to pay the underwriters of that. And your real tangible labor has been used to fund this fiat currency. And everybody just goes along with the program. So, anyhow. So, you're talking about frugality, but getting a little bit off track. But, well, there was a day when people understood what was necessary to live. And it was not just necessarily a day-to-day thing. I mean, there certainly was planning, but there was labor. There was effort. There was reward. There was risk. And there was inputs, the family inputs, basically, as it started out in the agrarian way. And there were certain rewards from that. And it wasn't just us. It was the entire local community that participated in these processes. I had a little something to open up with. I think we'll skip that. Let's just go right into this whole thing since we ended up going there. Let's talk a little bit about this frugality, Gigi's Boo. Why don't you go ahead and cover that?
Well, I'm kind of the queen of frugality. Gary will tell you that. I'm very, very skimpish when it comes to money. I don't buy things very often. I did buy a good winter coat this year spent a little bit of money that I had worked and had made, and so I was going to, you know, use it, and Gary, and I didn't want to buy the coat, but Gary said, you need a good coat, so get it. I have an everyday coat that I can wear around, but I needed one for dress that you could wear to church or to social functions. Funny, we never go to social functions much, but we do go to church. So I got that, and I really, really, really hated that I had to spend that money. But if it's like my mother said, if you buy a good wool coat and you take care of it, you probably will be wearing that wool coat 15 years from now, because I am not a label whore. I hate to put it that way. I've got a sister that is. She loves to shop. She loves money, and she stays in financial trouble all the time. Me, I don't do that. What I can't make, I'll buy at a thrift store or barter. There's very little money that changes our hands unless it's something that we really, really have to have. Gary and I do a lot of bartering. And you'll find people this day and time, whether you believe it or not, that really enjoy bartering. And let me explain bartering to you on our terms. If I see something that somebody has that I want, I can offer them what I can do. I can sew. I can crochet. Now, I'm not going to give her food away. I might barter making them some jam. If they give me strawberries, I might make them one case of jam. If they give me enough strawberries, we barter. We do it that way. Bartering doesn't have to be of equal value. Say, my stuff's $100, you're going to have to give me $100 worth back. It's what is important to the other person. And bartering is a good way to do, and we barter a lot. We cut a lot of our monthly income. My father absolutely adores cable. I detest cable. So the first thing that went here was cable. I do not like mainstream TV. I will not watch it. It has nothing to offer me because I don't like cops and robbers, and I don't like the MTV shows and all these other things that cable gives you. My house lives in New Jersey, and all those screeching women and stuff. If I'm going to watch something, I want it to teach me something. So we have cut cable, and actually we're going to save about $150 a month because we went with Netflix and Hulu, and there's a lot of free channels out there. If you just go down with your Roku stick and just find them, or your Amazon Fire, find them. And they're all free. There's lots of things that you can do. The other thing is I have found with our dogs that if I put in a few drops of apple cider vinegar in their drinking water, they don't scratch as much. And the vet slipped and told me that if you would keep adding it that to about a teaspoon, that it's a natural flea repellent, and it keeps their coats healthy. And also to give them a good rinse in apple cider vinegar. Well, how many times have we women heard, rinse your hair in vinegar? It's good. It makes it shine. It's really good for you. Apple cider vinegar is a great medicine, like we said. Have it in your house at all times. It'll kill strep. It'll kill a lot of diseases. And it's if you can get past the vinegary smell all the time. I even wipe my cabinets down and things down to it deodorizes it, and it also kills a lot of the germs. Another thing that I do is I go over our bills with a fine-tooth comb. When they come in, I look for anything on there that I don't know what it is. And, like, they'll sneak in these little hidden things on your telephone and all this other stuff. Just call them up. What's this? Why are you charging me this? They know how to rip you off. So question all bills, unusual bills. Another thing, in the summertime, is keep your blinds closed in the heat of the day. You stay cooler. Your air conditioner won't run as much in the wintertime. Open those blinds early every morning. Get that sunshine in, and it heats the room very well. You hear now of people that are always going to the gym. The gym's great. I just can't afford it. But you can exercise at home, and you can exercise if nothing but just standing still and doing some steps side to side. If you're fortunate enough to have a treadmill, walk a treadmill. Get you some little hand weights. If you don't have hand weights, get you a quart jar with some water in it and use those. Just work your arms. That's a great way to exercise. Dancing is a great exercise too. And that doesn't mean you have to be a great dancer. You can just dance if you have to, dance by yourself. If you go to the doctor and you take medication, always ask for the generic brand. And if you can't even afford, if they don't have the generic brand, if you'll call the company, they might not give you but a couple of months. But if you explain the situation to them, most drug companies will give you some extra medicine free. They're going to push those medicines because they're going to want you to have them. And all you have to say is, I'm sorry, don't have the money to pay those big prices, so my doctor's going to have to look for something else. They'll send you some. be sure that you check with your insurance if you've got any and see if you can get them to cut the copay a little bit. One other thing that Gary and I do is we fill the car up. We keep the car full, both cars, his car and mine. We keep it full of gas at all time because we never know when we're going to have to leave. And that's a whole different story with your bug out bags and everything like that. But make do with one trip. Say you've got to go to the grocery store to buy a few things. When you go to the grocery store, try to make your grocery store run in any errands that you have to do, doctor's appointments, the whole thing. Make it in one trip. And that way you save on money, on gas. You can say, you'd be surprised at what you save on gas. Shop around for different insurances. See if you've got the best. And it can't hurt to ask. Had one lady say, well, I'm not going to sit here and figure this insurance if you're not going to get it from me. And I said, well, I'm glad you told me that. And I've got your name, so I'm going to tell everybody about you. And, boys, it changed. So don't be afraid to open up your mouth. You know, open up and give them a little argue. Hang your clothes outside if you can instead of using the dryer. Try babysitting or being a handyman. Gary barters with wood. If you got a bike, ride your bike. Do as much as you can, like with saving on your groceries. Don't buy name brand. Go with store brand. Now, I'm a firm believer in Audi and the other one that's here now. I can't think of it. What is it, Gary? Lidl. Isn't that the name? I think.
Yeah, Lidl, L-I-D-L. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and check that grocery store for markdown meat. Anytime you go in, if you're a meat eater, check for markdown meat. You can buy the cheapest cut of meat if it's on sale, and you can cook it a certain way, and you can really get it tender. Like, I do a Swiss steak recipe. Well, you know, I get round steak. It's the cheapest and the toughest that you can get. And I cook it really, really slow for a long period of time, and it's very good. If you're going to make vegetable soup, I save all my vegetables that are left over, and then We have vegetable soup once every 2 weeks, whether it's hot or cold. And if you want to, if they run a sale on bread and stuff, be sure to buy 2 loaves and freeze one. If you're going to hit different grocery stores, a very easy way to insulate something, if you don't have an insulated bag, is just get your 2 cardboard boxes, one larger than the other, and just put paper down between it and cover the top, and you'd be surprised at how well that will keep something frozen or something cold.
Yeah, crumpled up newspapers in between.
Yeah, in between the 2 boxes and over the top. And you can always get those sun shields. And isn't that what I'm talking about, Gary, the sun reflectors?
Yeah, sure.
You can always put those over the top to hold the cold in. If you can buy in bulk, sometimes it might be easier. Another thing that you could do, which I'm not going to do because I don't know, unless I know the person really, really well, is you can sort of do a monthly meal freezer plan and get a bunch of people together and say, you're doing it at your house, they're doing it theirs, and then you swap meals out. Well, that's a good idea, but I'm not going to eat anybody's food that I don't know how they didn't, if I'm not there watching it. That's one of my sticklers. I'm not going to do that. I'm kind of funny. Your fruit. A lot of times people will buy fruit and they don't want to eat their bananas when they maybe turn a little dark. That's the best thing in the world you can do to make banana bread. So people will say, yeah, but I don't feel like making bread. Well, don't waste your bananas. Mash them up, put them in a container, freeze them. Then when you get ready to make bread, you've got them. Also do that with your other fruits and vegetables. If you have them, especially fruits, make them into smoothies. If you got a blender, just blend them up with a little ice cube and you can drink them down. It's really, really good. Switch off the oven for the last 5 or 10 minutes that you're cooking. Now, 1 year we tried and I fussed because I told Mama it wouldn't work. She put a turkey in one Thanksgiving and she had preheated the oven for like an hour on 200 degrees. And she put that turkey in. She cut the oven off and she sealed the door where none of us would open it. And the turkey was done the next day. And I couldn't believe it. Just overnight, the heat that it absorbed, it cooked and it was done and it was good. Your beef stews and your hamburgers, if you've got a leftover, you can always put those with your lentils. And oatmeal is always good in the morning to eat. It's really one of the best foods you can eat. Like I said, save all your vegetables to freeze. And always go by a recipe and a meal plan. And it doesn't mean like you got to have spaghetti every Monday, tuna casserole every Tuesday, but make you up about 2 to 3, maybe 4 weeks of menus. And then you just rotate them out how you want to eat them. Sometimes you might not feel like spaghetti on a Monday night. You'd rather have it for the weekend. And you can switch it around. And when you go to the grocery store, be sure you have a grocery list. You'll have a tendency not to overspend. Now, my grandparents always ate a big breakfast. Then she cooked a large dinner. And for supper, they had leftovers. So, save your leftovers. We don't mind eating leftovers. A lot of people do, but we don't. Keep your refrigerator clean and empty of free stuff. That way it will not run constantly. If it's clean and it's not got as much stuff piled in it. You can do your own vegetable garden. We've talked about that several times. You can barter again for your vegetables in the summer. And if you're working, this is a great tip. Be sure to take your coffee with you to work. And then again, like I said before, be sure that you do generic items. If you can get whole chicken versus parts, buy the whole chicken. Stretch meals, make them go. Cook in the crock pot. Add water, add your spices. Do everything from scratch instead of buying. Next week, I'll have a link for y'all to go to that I have a homemade mix. It's a standard mix that I keep mixed all the time. And it has my flour, my shortening cut in, my baking powder, my bake, everything that you need, including the dry milk. So when I get ready to make biscuits, all I have to do is take 3 cups of that mix out, add enough water to it to make it as moist as I want it, to pat my biscuits out, and they're done. It's so easy. I make my muffins that way. I make my banana bread that way, my orange bread. Another thing, if you like to drink tea, my advice is get you some different flavorings like strawberry, orange, whatever. Keep them in stock and add that a little bit to your tea. You know, iced tea is the wine of the South, and everybody down here drinks sweet tea. Pack your lunch and take it to work with you. Brown bag instead of eating out. That's really a great, great way to save money. Another thing that that we do is your tube of toothpaste. People will take a squeezed tube of toothpaste and throw it away. Nada. Take you something and cut it. Take a knife and cut it. Open it up. You can brush your teeth with an empty tube of toothpaste. What's against the side and what you can't squeeze out for another 2 weeks. I tried it and it works. Body wash. If you think you've used it all, you haven't. Put your little water in that and shake it up. You got one more bath or one more shower out of that. And my mother says, "Dear God, Bruna, you squeeze it to death." But I do. I try to take care, like I said, of the money wisely. You would be surprised at how much money you can save. And you can do the things you want to do. Now, like I said, Gary and I don't spend a lot of money. We don't intend to. But the money that we save, what we can do is we could take short trips. We like museums. We like free concerts. We'll even pay for a concert if it's not extremely high. We sit at the back, but we still, you know, we'll pay for that. And that's how we save our money. Another thing that I want to point out, I don't know how many of y'all actually save anything every week or every month or biweekly, however you get paid. But you need to save 15% of your gross income. And that's something that I do religiously. First, when I get paid, it goes straight into 15% goes straight into our savings account. Gary's the same way. And you know how many times that something's happened, like car battery, a tire, or something like that. If we hadn't had that money saved, we would have had to just kind of walk, I guess. And it's kind of hard for people to get used to doing that. But if you can do it and do it at the first of the paycheck before you do anything else, as my uncle says, pay yourself first. And then you go from there. Okay, I'm going to let Gary take over a few minutes. I got some background noise here that I can't hear, so I'm going to take care of that. Gary, can you take over a little bit?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out, and thanks for that, all that cheese, but yeah, the frugality thing is very important because we don't know where we're going to end up tomorrow. There's such a variety of events that could occur, and they're not all necessarily man-made, if you will, Michael man-made even, but they could be something natural events that we tend to overlook. We live in a very dynamic world, in a very dynamic universe, so you don't know what's coming next. I think I just read an article today that they seem to think that about 12,800 years ago, there was a major event, celestial event, probably a comet or cometary fragments that slammed into the earth and set fires and threw the earth into basically an ice age. And if there was any advanced societies or civilizations during that period of time, that probably wiped them out. And so, you know, one of the things I like to do is accumulate materials on catastrophism. And it's amazing when you start looking at all the evidence of regular catastrophic events that have occurred in our history. And so, resisting the temptation of the normalcy bias, one must entertain the idea that this isn't just, you know, something in the past. This is something that has been ongoing. And as far as we can tell, about 3 billion or so years the Earth has been around. This has been going on, off and on. So, who knows? You don't know. You don't know what's coming next. It's also always good, it's always a good thing to have some sort of preparations in mind and not be so reliant, especially technologically. Imagine for a minute, as technologically reliant as we are today, imagine for a minute something that catastrophically took down the power grid, for example. Everything, all bets would be off at that point. You know, let's just think about that for a minute. You know, they talk about the day after. That would not be a pretty picture. But anyway, without too much doom and gloom, it is something to keep in the back of your mind. And Brenna actually found a couple of cookbooks online, or PDFs, that look really interesting, and you might have interest in these. One of them is from 1918, and the other is from 1894. These are a collection of different recipes that were, you know, using the materials of the day that could obviously were available then, and would probably still be available if under the right preparation conditions. So here are a bunch of different different things. Let's do the 1890. You back, Gigi Smith? Hello, you back?
Yeah, I'm back. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay.
Let me put a real quick in here about cooking and not having anything to cook with, or the stove, or something's happened to the stove. I had a college student tell me one time that they wanted a grilled cheese sandwich so bad they took the iron and they put the cheese and the bread and everything together and laid it on cloth, and they put the iron on top, then they flipped it and put it on the other side. And I thought, how ingenious can you be? That's a great thing to know. So you can cook with an iron. I meant to throw that in there the other just a little while ago, but I just slipped my mind.
Yeah, that's okay. You want to talk about these two cookbooks that you found on?
Well, the cookbooks are very good from what I saw of them. They're, like I said, they're older, and they're you've got a lot of people who knew really how to make things go years ago. And what I couldn't get over was I saw in some how they made mayonnaise and they did beverages and the bread making and all that. That was really hard. And I saw something that came through some news feed, I believe. But it was the canteens that they set up for the soldiers, World War II. And one was in a little hole in the wall in Kansas. That train came through there, I think, twice a day. One going out and one coming back. And it carried nothing but soldiers. And how the women of that farming community got together and had food and met that train at every time. Now, you got to remember, back then, things were rationed. And they managed to make one birthday cake for each train, for any soldier that was coming through on the train that might have a birthday that day or that week. They gave them the cake and they all could enjoy it. It stopped long enough for them to come in. And they said these women were ingenious. They didn't have a Walmart to run to. All they had was a farm. And they made their own mayonnaise, popcorn balls, the whole nine yards. But these cookbooks, this 1918 Fanny Farmer cookbook, is amazing. And Gary's put the link up. If you want to download it, you can. And it gives you tips on water and salt and all other things, and starch, and how to test the starch if it's okay, and your sugar, and how to get your food ready. And they depended a lot on, back then you didn't have the pectin that we've got now, that we put in jellies to make it gel. They had to use apple peelings because apples had a lot of pectin in it. He told you about their poultry, their fish and meat, vegetables, all kind of things. And the salad dressings, if you get down there and read those, my Lord, it's just amazing what they did. And really good. So jump in there and get both of those. Now, the other one was, wait a minute, let me think. It was, I believe it was called Foods That Won the War. I believe that's it. And it went back and it told them, now you got to remember, you see a lot of things in here that'll tell you to eat less wheat, meat, fats, and sugar, eat more corn. But you got to remember, during World War II, there was no corn GMOs. Everything was there. You could buy, people didn't have onions. They had a lot. You could buy onion juice. So they substituted onion juice for it. In fact, I've got some of that, that onion juice that I use, and the yeast and everything. And it was all done with, you know, by hand. I was so amazed at these women, because here I am in a modern world, and I do a lot of things that are not quite so modern, but not quite as primitive as what these women. And I got to take my hat off to these women. They were some good, strong women. And they made their own cheese, and I make a little cheese. But just read those, and you'll really enjoy them. And it'll tell you how to use everything. I especially like the one that Foods That Would Win the War. And I liked it because that would have been around the time that my grandparents were there, and they did all this. And they did a lot of things sometimes without eggs and without milk and without a lot of things, because they didn't have it. So they used what they had. They provided for their family, and things were really good. If you really want to know it, it's really good. Back then, to see the good food that they ate. Simple, filling, a lot of beans and rice. People could live off of beans and rice forever, and you could still live off of it. There was one called an emergency biscuit, and you just took a cup of whole wheat flour and a cup of cornmeal and a little bit of fat and a little bit of baking soda and a cup of sour milk. Well, now, sour milk would be milk to them that was left over that did go sour. It wasn't quite buttermilk, but it was sour. And they just put a little salt in it, and they mixed it up, and they put it on the baking sheet, and you didn't go hungry. So I so admire women like that of that age. I told Gary many times I really wished I could have lived back then, but I guess like everybody, I'm a little bit spoiled. But that's about it, Gary. Go ahead and take over and talk a little bit.
Yeah, thanks for that. And just received word in the chat room. Rob Burke says that unless you have an account, you can't download from Dropbox.
Dropbox.
I've never known that to be a case with anyone else. We typically the other venture that we're involved with at Suspect Sky, when I do the editing and so forth on different things, it's always loaded either on Dropbox or Google Drive, and I've never had
Graham got it to work.
Yeah, I've never had a problem.
He said just click download and select direct download, and it downloaded for him.
Okay, just double checking because I never had that problem. Okay. Anyway. Yeah,
shoot Gary your email address, and we'll get it to you through an email address. Both of them, we'll drop it to you.
Yeah, I mean they're both PDFs. They're not huge files, so they can be shared that way pretty easily. So okay, yeah, I don't know. Nobody else I've dealt with has a problem with that. Whatever, it happens. Who knows? You're dealing with the internet, so it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
But anyway, thanks for all that food stuff. I mean, that's important. You mentioned beans and rice, and coincidentally, those are two things that store very well, too.
Yeah, they do.
I don't even know what the maximum shelf life would be on dried beans and rice. I have no idea. It would be the only thing that you would require would be water. And of course, if you like salt, you need that. And essentially, that'd be it. You would not need anything else, because the beans create the protein, and the rice, of course, the carbs. And you know, green vegetables are nice to have if you can grow them. The shelf life on those are not so hot. But, okay, good. I'm glad you got it there, Robert.
Got it. Did he get it?
Yeah, excellent.
Okay, good. Okay.
Okay, very good. Glad you got it. That one cookbook's over 700 pages. So if you thought about printing it out, well.
Well, still, it'd be worth to print it out and put it in a binder. Sure. I do all my cookbooks that
Absolutely.
Way.
Absolutely. I'm just saying to be prepared, because you have an ink investment and a paper investment there, because 784 pages, I think one of them is. So, yeah, it's well worth it. I mean, keep it in a binder, and if you really wanted to be safe with it, those sorts of materials that you feel like are really, really important, you might want to put them in a plastic bag and seal them up.
Mm-hmm.
But like I say, you don't know. It's hard to tell. I mean, we take for granted every day, and you just never know what might happen. And it's a sad fact, but sometimes After the fact is way too late. And I think that's unfortunately, I believe, going to be the case in not too distant future, but that's another story. But what about things like, you know, weapons? People typically steer away from talking about weapons too much because, I guess, the political correctness of all that. But why don't we talk a little bit about maintaining weapons?
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things, and we don't have a lot of time, 12 minutes, but that's okay. I'm going to push a little bit longer because we didn't record it at all, but for the first couple minutes. But there are a couple ways, you know, if you have a rusty weapon, and rust is the enemy of weapons typically, unless they're Cerakoted or something like that, but most people don't afford that. They have, you know, your regular blued or browned even. Browned weapons, and rust is the enemy. And in an environment that might not be environmentally controlled, if you will, in your air conditioning and heating and so forth, that may not exist under typical standards. you might have to deal with the whole idea of rusty weapons, and that rust will overtake one in a hurry. There are different ways of removing that rust. One way I found in an article in the website Range 365, they call it the penny method of removing gun rust. And they use the word gun. I hate the word gun because unless you're on a battleship or something like that, you probably don't have a gun. Or in a tank, you might have a gun. Anyway, and it talks about the fact sometimes you can even find a really, really good deal on a real rusted up shotgun or something that, you know, someone doesn't want to put the time into to fix it up. There are techniques that you can use to bring it back to life. One of those is, of course, that penny technique. I'm talking about basically put some oil on the metal and a pre-1982 penny. Now, remember that. You can't use the newer ones because the pre-1982 pennies were 95% copper and 5% zinc. Now, I think they make them out of chewing gum wrappers or something. I'm not sure. But you put a little bit of light oil on there, and you basically pick a spot and start rubbing the penny onto the surface rust, and it will remove it without damaging the gunmetal, because the copper is softer than the gunmetal. Another technique that I've seen used, and I've actually used it myself, is 4-0 steel wool. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 4, 0 steel wool, 4-0 steel wool, and your oil again, and not a heavy touch, not a too light touch, kind of a moderate touch. You can use that steel wool to remove superficial rust from a barrel without damaging the bluing. So I actually did that on a couple of weapons, and it worked fine. So we'll drop this link into the chat room, some of the things to keep in mind about how to take care of those necessary accoutrements in a power down situation or a system down situation. And here's another article also, and that talks about different methods. This guy has listed a bunch of different methods, and he names an oil. It's called Kroyl, K-R-O-Y-L, which I've never heard of, but it's apparently a very high-end penetrating oil that you can use, and you can purchase it online. It's not horribly expensive. This is something like if you have a seriously rusted out barrel or something like that. This is apparently something that works very, very well in that regard. So, there we go. Okay. So there we have the rust removal. Now, how about cleaning? Just general everyday cleaning. Now, not everyone has a huge supply of Hoppe's gun cleaning solvent, Hops, if you like to pronounce it that way, that which I've always used, and I think it's awesome. I used to even sneak it into the military and use it to clean rifles that way, and which they never said anything, but of course they had their own contracts for cleaning materials like CLP and things like that. But can't beat old Hoppe's. But you can make your own gun solvent, and it's a lot easier than you think it might be. And essentially, you just basically find yourself an old gas can, you know, like a plastic gas can, one that you don't need anymore. Now get yourself some automatic transmission fluid, either Dextron 2E or 3 automatic transmission fluid. And you have a can full of that, set it aside. And now go get you a little bit of kerosene in the same size can, and make sure to try to find the low odor version. I think a lot of that you can get those in the that's lamp oil, right? Gigi's boots that you can get in the hardware stores, and that's the low odor version of kerosene. And another can of the same size, fill it full of aliphatic mineral spirits. Okay, and it's just odorless mineral spirits. So you have three cans, equal size. You pour all those cans into the gas can and slosh it around a little bit, and you've just created basically your homemade gun solvent. Now, if you want to spice it up a little bit, you can add another can full of acetone. And that will help get rid of some of the plastic fouling that sometimes happens that gets jammed up into a shotgun. So the acetone, you can add that in equal measure as well. So it basically tells you how to do it. The article's pretty straightforward. Highly recommended to have your gun solvent around, and you'd have basically a whole gallon or half gallon or however, you know, size gas can that you end up using. And there we go. All right, now this is one I have to add a disclaimer onto. Be very, very careful with this one, and you will attempt this at your own risk. However, this is an article that shows you how to make your own gunpowder the old-fashioned way in less than 30 minutes. Okay, so push comes to shove, you need to make gunpowder. This article tells you how to do it. The actual formula is 75% potassium nitrate, 15% charcoal, and 10% sulfur. Now, one of the funny things, and people wonder where you find sulfur. Charcoal is not so hard to figure out, but sulfur is another story. One of the things I found out, and I never knew this until a couple of years ago, that if you ever seen Gigi's Boo, you ever seen all places in the woods where old houses were built years and years ago, and the houses were basically gone, but nothing but the stone foundations remained?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you know that around the edges of those stone foundations, you'll find sulfur, usually? And for some reason, sulfur will accumulate, I guess, there. It could be an electrical phenomenon of some sort, but you'll find sulfur around many of those foundation stones. So if you ever, you know, look around, that is a potential source.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the tools that you will need, a digital scale is nice, two glass or plastic mixing containers. Make sure you use glass. Do not use any ferrous or sparking material. Okay, that's why in muzzle loading, most of the stuff you see there is made out of brass, because it's very difficult to make brass spark. Yeah, but don't use any kind of steel, iron, nothing like that, because you don't want any sparks occurring while you're mixing gunpowder. And you have a plastic spoon, of course, a blunt object for smashing potassium nitrate, and a small brass hammer is a thought. And a fine mesh sieve, as some people might call it. And that's pretty much it. It gives you the technique and talks about eye protection and gloves and dust masks and all that good stuff. And to proceed with caution, you're dealing with an explosive item here. And it takes you step by step by step in creating your own gunpowder. I think it would be particularly useful for those who have muzzleloaders. Might find it come in handy. If you're a reloader, well, I guess you could. I mean, today's modern ammunition, the formulas for it is quite different than just this. But I suspect it would work in a pinch, that you could reload ammunition with this. So anyway, pretty much the two areas we promised we'd talk about, and I guess we did get into it. And 7:58, what else you got to talk about, Gigi's Boo?
Nothing right now, except I hope y'all have a real good week and don't get any of this bad stuff we've been getting.
Yeah. How about before we go, so we have a little bit of time. I actually need to tear up a little extra time because of the late start, the false start, 5-yard penalty. repeat first down. Anyway, why did I say that? Did you imagine, you know, you hear about robots all the time and artificial intelligence, but I tripped over this kind of humorous story, I guess. Pepper the robot was fired from a grocery store for not being up to the job. So you think it's bad for the people out there now? Robots have lives too, I guess. Robot lives matter. She was,
no, don't they?
Was fired from the job. Yeah, and it came. They tried out Pepper the robot in a Scottish grocery store. And while there was a documentary being made, Pepper, the humanoid robot created by Japanese telecom giant SoftBank, was put to work in the grocery store for a week, helping customers with inquiries, while at the same time attempting to offer some light entertainment. Oh, and it talks about Pepper's background as 120 centimeters tall. The robot can understand speech and respond with his own voice, and also communicate via a torso-based tablet. A set of wheels allows it to move around, although, admittedly, stairs provide a little bit of a challenge. So, at the grocery store, Pepper had a chatbot, created by a local university so he could have a relevant exchange with the customers. Initial reactions to Pepper or Fabio, as the staff began to call him, appears to be largely positive. They said he's just superb. And customers seemed both amused and curious about the latest addition to the store. However, it became apparent that Fabio was limited in the way he could help customers, and his answers didn't seem that helpful. For example, when a woman asks where she could find the milk, Fabio says that it's in the fridge section, without explaining where the fridge section is, and without taking her there. The same thing happened when asked about wine, and Fabio said it's in the alcohol section. And sometimes customers could get no response. So anyway, it just didn't work out so well for Fabio. The store people admitted that they're going to miss Fabio. At the moment, we're looking for a robot to replace a human's job, but I'm going to miss him. I'm going to come to the shop looking for him, and he's not going to be here. Boo-hoo. So all is not so out of control yet, Gigi's boo.
I know. Don't look like it is, does it?
Poor Fabio. He didn't make it. And here's, I think, the last thing we'll cover. This is the only thing left on the board, by the way. An article from IdeaPod that says, "We are born creative geniuses, and the education system dumbs us down." And that's according to NASA. Dr. George Land dropped a bombshell when he told his audience about the shocking results of a creativity test that was developed by NASA, but subsequently used to test school children. NASA had contacted Dr. Land and Beth Jarman to develop this highly specialized test that would give them the means to effectively measure the creative potential of NASA's rocket scientists and engineers. The test turned out to be very successful for NASA's purposes, but the scientists were left with a few questions. Where exactly does creativity come from? Are some people born with it, or is it learned? Or does it come from our experience? So these are all very relevant questions. And so they decided to give the test to 1,600 children between the ages of 4 and 5. What they found shocked them. This is a test that looks at the ability to come up with new, different, and innovative ideas to problems. What percentage of those children do you think fell in the genius category of imagination? A full 98%. But if that isn't interesting enough, it gets better. The scientists were so astonished that they decided to make it a longitudinal study and tested the children again 5 years later when they were 10 years old. The result? only 30% of the children now fell in the genius category of imagination. When the kids were tested at 15 years, the figure had dropped to 12%. What about us adults? How many of us are still in contact with our creative genius after years of schooling? Sadly, only 2%. So what's the takeaway from all that? And it's not too hard to figure out, they say. School, as we plainly call it, is an institution that has historically been put in place to ultimately serve the wants of the ruling class, not the common people. In order for the so-called elite to maintain their lavish lifestyles of overt luxury, where they contribute the least but enjoy the most, they understand that children must be dumbed down and brainwashed to accept and even serve the rapacious system of artificial scarcity, unending exploitation, and incessant war. And that conclusion was reached by a fellow by the name of Gavin Nascimento, who wrote an article outlining all of this. So if you think there aren't people noticing how stupid people are and why they're that way, well, you might want to think again, because it's out there. Anyway, I think that's about it for us tonight. Gigi's boo. What else you got to say?
Nothing but to remember to always take the road less traveled. And I love you all big to my heart. Have a wonderful week.
That's right. Hope all you guys enjoyed the show. We had a good time. We always have a good time here with everybody at RealLibertyMedia.com. And don't forget to throw your dollars in. Come on, you 400 or 500 people out there who are listening. Throw some dollars at RealLibertyMedia.com so they can continue to provide the service they have over the last 10 years. Thanks again for listening to The Road Less Traveled, and look forward to seeing you next week. Bye-bye.